This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. More smoky, unhealthy air from Canada. The wildfires burning there on the way. We get more from the AP correspondent Rita Foley.
It's those wildfires in Canada. They'll continue to send worsening smoky air across parts of the U.S. over the coming days, say experts. Most of the fires now considered out of control. Recent heavy rains miss the places where the fires are most active. One expert's suggestion, get into the habit of checking air quality every day this summer. One way to do that, go to the EPA's website, airnow.gov, and put in your zip code. This morning, Washington, D.C. and Chicago were among the places with unhealthy air. Meanwhile, NASA's reporting that smoke from wildfires in Quebec has now reached Europe. I'm Rita Foley.
The U.S. Supreme Court made a big decision this week, and more are expected. The AP's Lisa Dwyer has that story.
The Supreme Court is expected to announce more major decisions on the court's final day before the justices go on summer break. On student loans, the justices have yet to decide the fate of President Joe Biden's plan to wipe away or reduce student loans. When the court heard arguments in the case in February, the plan did not seem likely to survive, though it's possible the justices could decide the challengers lack the right to sue and the plan could still go forward. On gay rights, that case involves a Christian graphic artist from Colorado who wants to begin designing wedding websites, but objects to making wedding websites for same-sex couples. The justices have already released important decisions this week on other issues, including affirmative action, voting rights, and religious rights. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
And for details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence made a surprise visit to Ukraine on Thursday and met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Pence is the first Republican presidential candidate to meet with the Ukrainian president during the campaign. Pence's visit to Ukraine comes just after a deadly Russian missile strike on a pizza restaurant in the Ukrainian city of Kramatorsk killed 12 people, injuring dozens more. Ukraine's counterintelligence service said Wednesday it arrested a man it accused of helping Russia direct the attack. French prosecutors have said magistrates will investigate a police officer who shot and killed a teenage driver for voluntary homicide following 2 days of violent protests in France. We get more from AP correspondent Karen Chalmers.
Clashes first erupted in and around the Paris suburb of Nanterre, where the killing of 17-year-old Nahel took place during a traffic check. The government deployed 2,000 police to maintain order, but violence resumed after dusk. Multiple vehicles were set ablaze in Nanterre and protesters shot fireworks and threw stones at police, who fired repeated volleys of tear gas. In an emergency meeting, French President Emmanuel Macron said, "These acts are totally unjustifiable." Macron also called for remembrance and respect, as Nahel's mother called for a silent march in his honor. I'm Karen Chamas.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is going to start tracking infections caused by rare but potentially deadly germ impacting infant formula. The AP's Ed Donahue has that story.
The germ is called Chronobacter. Illnesses and deaths among children set off a nationwide shortage of infant formula last year. When the bug gets into a food such as powdered formula, it can cause life-threatening bloodstream infections and meningitis in very young or sick infants. The CDC says even though the infections are rare, up to 40% of babies who get sick will die. So far this year, one case of Chronobacter infection in an infant has been reported to the CDC linked to formula. The agency is warning parents to sterilize equipment used for bottle and breastfeeding after a baby died from a Chronobacter infection traced to a contaminated breast pump. I'm Ed Donahue.
The third day of the trial against former Brazil leader Jair Bolsonaro was suspended Thursday, will resume on Friday. Judges are evaluating the case by Brazil's Democratic Labor Party, which claimed the far-right leader abused his power by using government communication channels to promote his campaign and cast unfounded doubts on the country's electronic voting system. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, June 30th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Rwanda says it is one of the safest countries in the world, despite a British appeals court ruling.
The headline that we were seeing was UK court deems Rwanda unsafe. That is a Rwanda that we as Rwandans cannot identify.
Rwanda's main opposition leader says a British court decision vindicates his position that bringing refugees to Rwanda for settlement is illegal. Internally displaced persons in Sudan struggle to find basic supplies. Eswatini's pro-democracy group commemorate its June 29, 2021 protest to demand democratic reforms. Sierra Leone's main opposition officially rejects the June 24 election results.
The party is asking that Mr. Cornell publish the disaggregated results by polling station so that the doubts that every Sierra Leonean has can be cleared.
And President Biden expresses severe disappointment with the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling on college admissions. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Rwandan government says it takes issue with Thursday's ruling by Britain's Court of Appeals, in which it said Rwanda was not a safe country for asylum seekers and refugees. In a statement sent to VOA, Rwandan government spokesperson Yolande Makolo said Rwanda is one of the safest countries in the world, recognized by the UN and other international institutions for its exemplary treatment of refugees. In its ruling, the Court of Appeals said the UK could not guarantee that the asylum seekers, if sent to Rwanda, would not be deported to their countries of origin. Sani Nanyombia is a weekly columnist and podcast host at Rwanda's daily newspaper, The New Times. He tells me that anyone who has been to Rwanda would be surprised by the British court's description of the country.
It's somewhat surprising because the Rwanda that the judges described was not the Rwanda I live in. The headlines that we were seeing was UK court deems Rwanda unsafe. That is a Rwanda that we as Rwandans cannot identify. And anyone who's been to Rwanda will also feel quite surprised by such a label. Obviously, in terms of the policy itself, the Rwandan people have been very, very supportive on the whole. Why? Because this country has been one that has been open to refugees over the last couple of decades. We have over 85,000 Congolese refugees. We've had refugees from different neighbors, including Burundi. And also, Rwandans have been refugees. That's part and parcel of our history as a nation. So we have been both on the receiving end of refugees, and we've also been refugees ourselves. So us being an open place, country that was open to working with the UK government to create solutions for the terrible migrant problem in Europe, in the UK in particular, we were quite supportive of that.
As you mentioned, Rwanda has welcomed refugees from other countries. The concern raised by the critics is that they say that Rwanda has a record of crushing political dissent and free speech.
Well, those critics are quite interesting because just the UNHCR, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, is constantly bringing in refugees from Libya and having them here in Rwanda. So on one side, you cannot have the UNHCR bringing in refugees into a country that is unsafe. That would not make any sense. Now, if we're talking about human rights and freedoms, I live in Rwanda. I write in the media. I speak to Rwandans. That narrative seems, again, very, very foreign.
Sani Nanyombia is a weekly columnist and podcast host at Rwanda's daily newspaper, The New Times. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kigali. The leader of Rwanda's opposition Green Party says he welcomes Thursday's decision by the British Court of Appeals denying Rwanda the right to serve as a third country for refugees to the United Kingdom. The court said the British government could not guarantee that asylum seekers, if sent to Rwanda, would not be deported to their countries of origin. Opposition leader Frank Habineza tells me that the court ruling vindicates his long-held position that the deal was illegal because it violates the UN Convention for Refugees.
We are very pleased, very happy with the court ruling in the UK because it has vindicated us. Of course, all along, we had highlighted irregularities in this migration deal because the UN Convention for Refugees highlights that if people come to you, you have an obligation to receive them. And for the European Union law, it states that if someone lands into Europe, the first country that lands in has obligation to receive that person. So for the UK deal with Rwanda, it was not right. It was illegal because the UK wanted to send them to Rwanda, whereby Rwanda was not the first country they arrived in and not the first country of their choice. So in this case that these people passed through the English Channel, if UK did not want them, they should have sent them back to France because that's where they came from, but not to Rwanda inside the country. So basically it was all illegal, and we are very happy that the court highlighted all those irregularities. And then the second point was on the humanitarian ground. We understand that the government of Rwanda was willing to see these refugees on humanitarian grounds. And we say, yes, if these people had the chance to come to Rwanda, no problem. We, also, as a democratic part of Rwanda, would be very happy to receive them if they had chosen to come to Rwanda, but they never chose to come to Rwanda. And they would, if they come here, they would, as you know, we are developing countries, they would face challenges of employment opportunities. Like we are also facing employment opportunities here. The young people, they don't have enough jobs, and they're not developing country. And there are more of those opportunities in the UK than there would be in Rwanda. So Rwanda is not as rich as the UK, is not as big as the UK. So those people have more opportunities in the UK than in Rwanda. So on all those grounds, we oppose this deal, and we're very happy with the court ruling today.
But the government, the Rwandan government said it has agreed to accept the migrants or the refugees because this is part of a tradition to welcome people who are in need.
Yes, if we would agree with that, if they were in need of coming to Rwanda, if they had chosen to come to Rwanda, no one would stop them, would be happy, because we as a party, we also love refugees. If they chose to come to our place, we would receive them. But these people never chose to come to Rwanda. They chose to go to the UK, and they did all what they could. They risked their lives to go to the UK, and the UK has the obligation to receive them under the UN law. Not Rwanda's obligation at all.
Frank Habineza is leader of Rwanda's opposition Green Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kigali. Sierra Leone's main opposition, All People's Congress, the APC party, has officially rejected the results declaring President Julius Maada Bio the winner of the June 24 polls. In a statement released late Thursday, the party said the results announced by the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone are not a true representation of the total number of valid votes cast. Sidi Yaya Tunis is the APC National Publicity Secretary. He tells me that the APC wants the Electoral Commission to ensure that the vote cast in both the presidential and the Freetown City mayoral elections be counted, verified, and certified by polling stations.
The party put out a release today reiterating its position of finding it difficult to accept the results and totally rejecting the results as announced by the Chief Electoral Commissioner, Mr. Mohamed Kone, with regards to presidential elections. The party is asking that Mr. Kone publish the disaggregated results by polling station so that the doubts that every Sierra Leonean has and even the doubts that have been expressed by local and international observers can be cleared, because once we see the results as published, our polling stations will all be able to compare the votes that were counted in those stations are recorded by the various polling agents and observers that were present at those stations. So we want clarity.
Mr. Tunis, as you know, President Maada Bio has already been sworn in. So are you saying by rejecting the results, you're also rejecting the fact that he has been sworn in as president?
Well, I will not go that far because I don't want to find myself wanting for treason. Like you clearly stated, he has been sworn in. So you know, I cannot go that far unless our party goes through the court and the court says otherwise. But what we have issues with is not Mr. Bio or President Bio at this moment. We have issue with Mr. Mohamed Kone and the ECSL. We want him to, you know, give more credibility to the pronouncement he made of President Bio being elected President of the Republic of Sierra Leone. He needs to clear the doubts surrounding the results that were announced. Currently, not only the APC that has problem with the way the elections process, especially relating to tallying and counting that produced the results, you know, but we have other local and international organizations also that have expressed serious concerns about the accountability and transparency issues around the elections and even the counting and tallying process and other issues that we have discovered that will render the whole process not credible.
Sidi Yaya Tunis is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition All People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Button in Washington. Today is Friday, June 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The United Nations says the war in Sudan, which began on April 15, has so far forced some 2.5 million people from their homes, about 80% of whom are displaced internally. Sidakman Ibrahim spoke to some of the displaced now living in Sudan's Al Jazeera state in this story narrated by viewers Vincent Mankori.
A large number of people displaced by the conflict in Sudan have been fleeing Khartoum and going to Al Jazeera State, located in the east central region of the country. A teacher at a school in South Khartoum, Leila Al-Rashid, is one of those who escaped the capital. She says she was forced to seek shelter in Wad Madani camp, the capital of Al Jazeera State, due to relentless bombing in Khartoum. Al-Rashid now lives here with her niece, who gave birth in the camp.
The current situation is completely unstable. We've been suffering due to the insecurity since the beginning of the war, and now we're living in a very difficult living situation. Everything is gone now. We're suffering greatly from the disaster. We don't know what to do.
Al Jazeera State now shelters tens of thousands of displaced people in facilities that were previously schools, universities, and mosques, according to aid agencies. Most of these institutions turned shelters are run by civilians and other humanitarian organizations, but some with medical conditions like Babu Ali Ismail say they lack medical care.
I had missed a number of dialysis sessions. When I had run out of all the medicines, the situation became dangerous for me. I came to Wad Madani to find a dialysis center. I live now in this school, which has turned into a shelter.
Sinahid Hussein, a resident of Khartoum, fled the city to give birth in Wad Madani after experiencing what she calls the horrors of war in the capital city.
The war forced us to leave our city. I was pregnant and placed here in the shelter. I left Khartoum because there were no hospitals there. We stayed for days under bombardment. Then we left after 2 weeks to the city of Wad Madani. Here, I receive full care from the officials of the center, and they provide me with a doctor's appointment.
Humanitarian organizations and civilian volunteers running the temporary shelters say they face shortages in supplies. One camp supervisor, Abdallah Hamad Al-Nim, says their operation is mainly funded by donations from residents in the area.
We receive aid through the efforts of citizens and some organizations to provide the camp's needs like flour, rice and oil. We have a warehouse to store supplies and we have a large kitchen to prepare food for families, some of whom help us in cooking. We also desperately need medicines because we have a large number of diabetics and blood pressure patients, in addition to cancer patients and pregnant women who need special medicine.
In the meantime, displaced people hope some semblance of peace will return to Sudan and relieve their current predicament. For Sid Ahmed Ibrahim in Al Jazeera State in Sudan, Vincent McCorry, VOA News.
An opposition leader in Eswatini says the country's pro-democracy groups hope that Southern African leaders meeting there will push King Mswati III to initiate a process of national dialogue with pro-democracy groups in the country. This comes as leaders of the Southern Africa Customs Union, SACU, including South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, were meeting Thursday in Eswatini. It also comes on the anniversary of the June 29, 2021 protest to demand democratic reforms. The government blamed foreigners for hijacking the demonstration and turning it violent. Busi Maisela is the leader of the Swazi First Democratic Front Party. She tells me that Eswatini pro-democracy groups are disappointed that Southern African leaders would be meeting in a country where, she says, pro-democracy members are still bleeding from the violence 2 years ago.
We observe this day with grief because it's a painful reminder of the lives that were lost on the 29th of June 2021 in the hands of our king and his army. Unfortunately, because of the hostility that we have in the country as groups that are calling for democratic reforms, we could not really have any significant day of remembrance for the people that we lost.
As you know, two members of parliament were recently found guilty because, as the government put it, they were responsible for instigating the violence that took place.
I think government is known of just blaming the people that have no power to stand and have the right to their freedom of speech, the right to equal right to speak and be heard, because the governments are run by one man and one man only, which is the king. So we expected that from government. We expected government to get the MPs as a scapegoat for what they did by giving them all the blame for instigating the unrest in 2021. Yet we know it is government's fault for the loss of lives.
As we speak, members of the Southern African Customs Union, SACU, there's a summit taking place in Eswatini. What's your message?
The message is clear. We are very disappointed. We are disappointed because what we can see is that for SADC and SACU, it's business as usual. The plight for Maswati is not taking into account. The issue that Swaziland is not democratized is not taken into account. And the uprising and the issue of dialogue is also sidelined. And they are entertaining Maswati in the delaying tactics and continuing to perpetuate the brutality on the citizens. So we are very disappointed that the SADC head of states are even going to Swaziland to meet in a country where we are still bleeding, because it's only 2 years today since the brutal killing of Maswati by the government. So we are not happy, and we are really hoping that they are going to now push Maswati to the table so that we have an inclusive dialogue. We are going to speak and have one voice on how to run the country.
That was Busi Mayisela, founder and president of the Swazi First Democratic Front Party, Eswatini's first female-led political party. She was speaking with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. U.S. President Joe Biden is calling the Supreme Court's vote to strike down affirmative action a severe disappointment, but says it cannot become a permanent setback for diversity in education. The 6-2 ruling deems unconstitutional the use by universities of race as a factor in deciding which qualified applicants can be admitted. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman is at the Supreme Court and has details.
President Biden, hours after the Supreme Court's ruling, said schools of higher education should keep a commitment to ensure their students come from diverse backgrounds that reflect all of America. Speaking at the White House, the president expressed concern the decision by the justices overturning decades of precedent could have ramifications beyond the classroom.
Companies who are already realizing the value of diversity should not use this decision as an excuse to turn away from diversity either.
Republicans are applauding the ruling. Former President Donald Trump, the party's frontrunner in next year's primary election for the presidency, says the decision means people with extraordinary ability and everything else necessary for success, including future greatness for our country, are finally being rewarded. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the Supreme Court.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the Africa Francophone Games. Approximately 1 month before the start of the Francophone Games in Kinshasa, DR Congo is now racing against time to be ready. Some media reports say the country appears not to be ready to host the much-coveted competition hosting French-speaking nations. The director of the National Committee of the Francophone Games, Isidore Kwanja, denied such claims and confirmed the event should be able to go ahead. The 9th Francophone Games are scheduled to take place from the 28th of July to the 6th of August in the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and more than 3,000 young athletes and artists from some 40 countries are expected to take part in the event, which mixes sporting and cultural competition. Staying with athletics, the organizers of this year's Nairobi City Marathon will monitor the quality of the air on the Nairobi City Marathon route all through the duration of the race on Sunday as more elite athletes registered. Athletics Kenya, under the United Nations Sport for Climate Action, have installed 9 air quality sensors along the route that will indicate if the air athletes are breathing is permissible in competitive sports. International distance runners Edwin Kiptoo and Ethiopian Haile Mekonnen are the latest elites to enter this year's Nairobi City Marathon, the richest road race in Africa. Athletics Kenya President Jack Tui disclosed that they have increased the number of sensors by 3 so as to cover enough ground during the races that will start along Aerodrome Road and end at the Nyayo National Stadium. In basketball news, Burundi are through to the 2023 FIBA Under-16 Women's African Championship final round after edging Rwanda 61-41 in their second match at the ongoing FIBA Africa Zone 5 qualifiers. The side came into the clash on the back of a hard-fought overtime 62-52 victory against Tanzania in the opening match played on Wednesday, the 28th of June. Burundi joins Uganda under 16 women who had already booked their ticket to the final round of the FIBA Africa Women's Championship set for Tunisia from the 13th to the 23rd of July. In the African Championship, 3 nations from FIBA Africa Zone 3 and another one from Zone 2 are in Abidjan to slug it out for a ticket to the 2023 FIBA AFROCON to be held in Luanda, Angola next month. Zone 3's Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, and Zone 2's Guinea look battle ready for action at the Parade du Sport de Trècheville. The 4-nation regional qualifier will run from Friday, June 30th to Sunday, July 2nd. The winner of this qualifier will be added to Group A in the 2023 AFROCON alongside Kenya and Gabon. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
It is said that laughter is good for the soul, but comedy also sheds light on everyday life concerns that impact our communities. This week on Our Voices, we take a look at African female stand-up comedians who are making their mark in this genre of entertainment while also advocating for what they believe makes our society a better place. Join the conversations Wednesday at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.